Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea, and I am joined in studio by Ellison Wiest. Hello, Ellison.
Hello, Sarah, and congrats on Boston.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank
Yay.
You. Yeah, I am feeling surprisingly good given how utterly thrashed my legs felt at the end of that.
And you say you owe it all to the Highland
Arnosport. And they are these homeopathic tablets that dissolve under your tongue. And Highlands was in, they are one of the official sponsors of the Boston Marathon with their product Leg Cramps, which contains quinine, which I am allergic to, which means no gin and tonics. And if I get malaria, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Suffer.
But, yes. Oh, there we go.
Suffer.
So one of the women with Highlands knew that about me, which I was very impressed with her attention to detail. And so when they had this after party, which makes it sound like we were clubbing it, but we were not, after the marathon, she comes up to me with this bottle and is like, here, Sarah, put these under your tongue. You're totally going to help. And so they dissolve under your tongue. And oh my gosh, my legs, I mean, my quads were just, had been seizing up. My Achilles was just utterly angry at me on my affected ankle. And then like when I went up after getting a few pictures taken, went up to my hotel room to take a shower. And as I was trying to put on my UFOs flip-flops afterwards, my left toes just completely cramped. It looked like I was like this arthritic, like 100-year-old. The way
I've
my
had
toes...
that happen. Oh, that is gross. And it...
I was like, no, lay flat toes. So I was just really, really cramping and seizing badly. And so the woman from Highlands, her name is Margo. And so Margo was just like, you know, my pusher. And she just kept on coming over and giving me a couple little tablets to put under my tongue. And I woke up the next day feeling better than I have after almost any marathon I've ever run.
That's amazing.
When I had been in, there's only one or two marathons that I can think of that I felt worse after than after Monday's Boston.
And now these are out and available now,
yes,
correct?
Yes, they're
right.
On.
And where do you hide yours? Upstairs? Which cabinet?
Tell me now, sir. Tell me now.
Right. I'll just step out for a moment.
Yeah. So, and I took some on the plane ride home. And So Arnosport, yes.
Great.
So, yes. So anyway, so I am going to save a lot of the race details for next week's show, when I'll be talking to my coach and my training partner. Molly will be the co-host. So, I spent some nice quality time with my parents in Connecticut.
How are they?
Thanks for asking. When last we left the Bowen parents, they were both in rehab facilities, and I didn't know whether or not they would be home by the time I went home. Home to their house. After living out of home for how many years, I need to stop saying home.
We
like
all
I still
do
live
it.
There. So my mother had arrived back at her house on Thursday, and I got there Tuesday mid-morning, and my dad was still at a rehab place. And so, oh my gosh, my mother's a very loving woman, but she really, really rarely cries. And I walked in the front door. I Ubered it from the airport to my parents' house. And I walk in the door and my mother walks over to me and she just gives me this big hug. And she says, it is so good to see you. And she was tearing up and like starting. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wasn't expecting this. So that was really wonderful. So, so we went and saw my dad every day and I really didn't know what to expect. And he, you know, physically he's not doing all that great. He has a lot of infections on his feet. He has Parkinson's, so he, you know, shakes some. But my gosh, the elevator still goes all the way up to the penthouse in that man. I mean, he is just, I mean, my father is so brilliant. He has these sparkly blue eyes. And I mean, the light is just shining brightly in his eyes. And he just follows conversations and He definitely knows that the medications he's on sometimes make him think weird things, but he's like observes the weirdness almost and knows that it's not really happening.
So he can
to
step
him.
Back from it.
Yeah. So, but you know, he's almost 90. And so we sometimes doubt his memory a little bit. And so like on the third day, he always really wants to know like what's going to be happening. So he would have to go to these appointments and he would want to know when they would be coming to pick him up and who would be going with him and all this stuff. And so when we had left him, I guess on, I think Tuesday night, he was supposed to have an appointment whatever night it was. And we get there the next morning or next day and we're like, Dad, so how was your doctor's appointment? He goes, oh, I didn't have a doctor's appointment this morning. And my mom and I look at each other and we're both thinking, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, you went to the doctor. You just don't remember it. So, and even my mother like said something like, oh, the bandages on your foot look new. And I knew her implication was because the doctor redid them this morning. And so finally my mother's like, Sarah, why don't you go out and ask them at the nurse's station if your dad went to the doctors? And so this was Friday. This was my last day there. And so she opens up the little like calendar that they have and there's the check in an envelope that like when you get transported from there to the doctor's appointment, you have to give a check. And there it said Charles Bowen and it originally said 414 and they crossed it out as, you know, whatever day it was that he sure enough had not seen.
Oh boy. This
and I'm like, okay, I can't doubt my dad anymore.
That's right.
So I go back
right.
And I'm like,
I love the way she wants to make you the fall gal.
Right. So I'm like, mom, dad was right. So we let him know that we would trust his memory going forward. So, it was just really nice to hold his hand and to talk to him. Mm. And, I played some Hamilton for him on my phone because they think I'm so clever for getting tickets to it in San Francisco. And, primary in New York was coming up. We talked about that. And they're coming up in Connecticut. So they'll be able to vote. And so talked about that. My dad, like me, loves the New York Times. So I read the New York Times out loud to him and we, you know, had commentary on it and all that stuff. So yeah, so it was good. I mean, it was hard to say goodbye, you know, because you just don't know if that's the last time,
yes,
you know, you'll be laying eyes on your parent. But no, it was very good. And I know they were very excited for me to run Boston. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. Having met both of them, I they were both just jewels.
Oh, that's very nice.
I really enjoyed both of them. That's... And I always very fond, especially of your mother, because she's a big reader.
Yes. Yes. So, right. Look at that. I jumped right over the, I'm supposed to remind people who you are. So what have you been reading since you last hosted, Allison?
Yeah. Well, The Book Bully has had sort of an off month. When we left, I was in the middle of The Nest, mm-hmm, which we mentioned, and I still think that that's going to be a runaway bestseller. I still think a lot of people are going to enjoy that one. And this month I read two books back to back that I have to say kind of went hand in hand. One is fiction. It's The Turner House by Angela Flournoy, mm-hmm, and I may be butchering her name, but it is a debut novel that many people felt should have been shortlisted for the Pulitzer, which was came out on Monday. But it's an excellent novel about a family, African-American family living in Detroit. And they had been living in the same house for 50 years. And now, because of all the troubles in that end of Detroit, the house is about to probably be either seized by the bank or the family has to decide whether they're going to sell it. I thought it really started off strong. I felt she lost her way a little bit with one of the plot points towards the end, but I definitely think she's an author to watch. And I think it will appeal to a number of people, particularly if you're into sibling novels, and this seems to be the year of sibling novels.
Exactly right. I'm sensing a theme here from
that's
your
right.
last suggestions.
That's right. And then I followed that up with a nonfiction book that essentially deals with some of the same plot points, and it's called Evicted, and it's by Matthew Desmond, and essentially it discusses what the title says. It's the history of eviction, but mainly focuses on evictions in the 21st century, and very eye-opening to this problem, which is a real problem all over the country. I know that here in Portland, we deal with housing and rental prices that are just skyrocketing. Mm-hmm. And this gives a face, many faces to this problem, and discusses it not only from the aspect of people being evicted or on the edge of being evicted, but also talks about the landlords.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, good. So a really balanced look at it.
Yes, very balanced and excellent writing. It's one, another one of these nonfiction books that reads like fiction. And then I've just finished a book that I think is going to appeal to a lot of people who have enjoyed A Man Called Ove, the Swedish runaway novel that's hit the bestseller list recently. But this book is called The One in a Million Boy. It's by a woman named Monica Wood. And it, it has some of those same plot lines. Essentially, it features a woman who's over 100 years old, who in the beginning, has been visited every week by a rather odd but charming 11-year-old boy. And this is part of his duty as a Boy Scout to come by and spend time with her once a week. And suddenly, one day, he doesn't appear. And we learn early on that he's died. This is not a plot giveaway. But his father, who was not always a figure in his life, is sort of goaded by his grieving mother into, listen, your son took on this duty, and you need to fulfill it and continue. And it's not a downer. It has a lot of very funny moments. And so we get to learn about this woman and about the father. And then we learn about the boy himself. So I really think it will appeal to people who like A Man Called Ove, and just a charming little feel-good novel.
When you're talking, I kept thinking, feel-good novel, feel-good novel.
Right. And then I just picked up from the library Eligible by Curtis Sitton. The latest.
I heard her interview on NPR. Yes. And I think I might have heard that the morning of the Boston Marathon. I was like, oh, note to self, I want to, or maybe it was on Weekend Edition Sunday.
I can't remember what it was on. I heard a snippet of it.
Yes,
yeah.
And so I definitely was thinking I want to be reading
that. Yeah, the reviews have been so-so. But I have to say, I met her years ago, right after Prep came out at Wordstock here in Portland. And she was so sweet and, you know, very charming, very bright young woman.
I've enjoyed her other novels. Prep, and then the one about not
Barbara
about
Bush,
Laura,
but
Laura
yeah,
Bush, yes.
Yeah,
American Wife.
Yes, American Wife.
Oh, I pulled that out. Wow. Maybe arm sport helps the mind
that's
too.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Which, excuse me again. I'm going up into your kitchen.
And I do have to. You saying the Pulitzer? I have to give a shout out to my alma mater.
Yes.
Yes, Peter Balakian from Colgate University won a Pulitzer on Monday, and I know that because my sophomore roommate texted me and she said, Sarah, well, it's a great day for Colgate. You finished the Boston Marathon. Peter Blakey and won the Pulitzer.
I love that those are and, equal footing.
He was the first English professor I had at Colgate.
Oh, wow.
And so I really showed my chutzpah back then. I didn't get in originally as a freshman. Sometimes it's hard to get into English classes, and he was teaching American Lit. And so I knew a junior who wanted to drop the class, but he hadn't dropped it yet. He was the editor of the Colgate Maroon, the newspaper. And so he was kind of a big man on campus, this junior. And so I was in Professor Blakeen's office and I said, oh, well, you know, Dave Talbot's going to drop the class. And he was like, oh, really? Well, why don't we just call him and see about that? And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll call Dave. So I'm like, here, do you want to talk to him? So Peter Blakeen was like, fine, you can be in the class.
Well, we might want to tell our listeners what he won.
I actually don't know, but I know that he is very big in, so he's Armenian.
Right.
As his last name, Blakeen, might lead one to believe. And he definitely was one of the early people who shone the light on the Armenian genocide. The Turks, Armenians, there's debate depending on which side you land on as to whether it truly was a genocide or not. And so is it a book of his or
thought it was a book, but then I wondered if it was an in-depth article.
So I'm embarrassed to not know.
So am I. I'm embarrassed to be blanking.
Yes. But he has definitely brought a lot of attention to that issue. And that issue has, I know that, even Obama has kind of been involved in that because of, I think when he maybe spoke to a head of state and whether or not where America lands on who's to blame in that whole conflagration.
Yeah.
I just want to use the word conflagration on this podcast,
love that.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Three times. Oh, and I have you to thank for the book that I'm reading now.
Oh, yes.
The Beekeeper's Apprentice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm embarrassed that I haven't read it. It's over 20 years old, and I'm really enjoying it.
I know. I recommended it last time at tonight's book group to talk about that.
Oh, cool.
So, yes, we're recording on Thursday instead of a Wednesday. I have going to go see my son run a track meet, run the 1500. In a track meet and then going straight to book group. So really an attire dilemma. Wow. How do you dress to go from an overly warm spectating of a track meet to book group? But that feeds right into the 1500, feeds right into one of our guests.
That's exactly right.
Sarah
Brown.
Gosh. Wow, I did so well at that. Wow. So today, Ellis and I are going to be joined by two guests, a professional middle distance runner and a quote-unquote average mother runner here in the Portland area. And what's the common thread, you might ask? They both incorporate elliptigos into their training. First up is professional middle distance runner Sarah Brown. She's training for the Olympic trials in the 1500 meters. But the main reason we're having her on the show is she just gave birth to her first baby, daughter Abigail, in early March. Might I add, Abigail's birthday is my birthday.
Hey.
March 4th. Throughout Sarah's pregnancy, she trained for the Olympic trials, including utilizing an elliptigo for many of her workouts. But before we bring on the other Sarah, let's take a quick break for a message from a sponsor. Stay tuned. Thanks for joining us, Sarah, and congratulations on becoming a mother runner.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much.
Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about your evolution to becoming a top American middle distance runner?
I think running kind of came naturally to me as a kid. I was always kind of the fast girl in gym class, even in elementary school, trying to beat the boys. And I started out as a soccer player when I was like 6 years old and ended up playing till I was 16. But my strength was always just being able to keep running around the soccer field, and you know, everyone else would tire out and I could just keep going. So it was one of those things I was just naturally good at. And so my parents entered me in some races when I was in middle school, and you know, I made it to the national championships in those races and won the national title. And so from there, that's kind of how I got my start in the running world.
Wait, so there's national championships for middle school students?
Yeah, well, it's for AAU track and field and Hershey track and field. Those are the two events that are the two programs that I competed in when I was, I think, 13.
Wow. So they really start them young.
Yeah. I mean, if you go to any of those AAU meets, they're all day affairs with everyone from like 5 year olds running. So, you can get started really early in the sport. I didn't get started quite that early, but,
And then I assume you ran track in college.
I did. I went to the University of Tennessee and ran for JJ Clark, was really fortunate to be part of an awesome team there. And several of the girls that I ran with at Tennessee still run professionally today. So that's kind of cool.
Nice. Nice. So, okay. So now we're going to veer a little bit into TMI topics, because we love TMI around here on AMR.
Okay.
So you blogged that your pregnancy was unplanned, that you had an IUD at the time, and your original due date was 15 weeks. That's 15 weeks prior to the Olympic trials. So
yes.
Talk us through your thought process when you first got that call from your doctor informing you that you were indeed pregnant, and then how you plotted for your training to continue.
When the doctor called me to tell me I was pregnant, it was definitely a crazy mix of emotions. By that time, I knew there was something going on with my body because I had gone to the doctor in the first place and my racing had gone downhill. I was kind of on the top of my game to the bottom of my game in like just a matter of like weeks. So I knew something was wrong. So when he told me, I think there was a mix of like relief that like, oh, I know what's wrong. There was also a lot of anxiety because I knew I had an IUD and I just wasn't expecting to hear, you know, that I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit scared for the same reason. I didn't know what it meant to have an IUD and be pregnant at the same time. I didn't know. Those didn't seem like they should really
coexist.
Go together very
yeah.
well. Yeah. So I was fearful for some health reasons. But there was also like, you know, a sense of a little bit of excitement and stuff, because this is, I mean, as unexpected as the news was, it's still my first child, and my husband and I had planned on having kids, you know, down the road. And so we were just gifted with our daughter earlier than expected. And I mean, looking back now, I wouldn't change anything. But yeah, so it was a mix of a lot of emotions going on.
And then, I mean, how quickly did your brain then scramble to be like, okay, but the Olympics are coming up. How do I stay on course for that?
So the first, I think for the first like week and a half, it was a lot of focused on my health and the baby's health. Just because of the IUD, we had some complications we had to work through, going, getting ultrasounds, making sure everything was okay, getting the IUD removed. And so for that kind of time frame was spent more just like focusing on the health aspects and just my health and the baby's health and getting through those initial first few weeks. But I think it was kind of right, not, you know, it wasn't long after that, that I began to kind of think, like, I knew that, you know, no matter when I was pregnant or what the time frame was, I was always planning on training throughout my pregnancy. Whether that would have been down the road, having in the future, having kids, or, you know, in this circumstances, like, even if I couldn't get ready for the Olympic trials in time, I would continue training because it's still so much a part of me and what I do and what makes me happy and what makes me feel complete. And I think that's kind of an important thing, especially in pregnancy, that you kind of maintain that balance in your life. So there was no question about whether I would train, but it just, all of a sudden, my husband and I kind of looked at each other and we're like, well, if we do the math, like, you've come back from some injuries and gotten in shape pretty quickly. And I know this is a whole different animal to tackle, but, you know, it's worth a shot. Like, we might actually, it's a narrow window, but we might have a chance at this. So, it kind of just became one of those things, like, you know what, if I was sitting on the sidelines and hadn't tried, I'd regret that. So the biggest thing for me was to have no regrets, and to have no regrets for, you know, my definition would be to, you know, put it out there and try to get back in shape and get myself on the line at the Olympic trials. So
obviously your training then had to evolve as your pregnancy progressed. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened and went forward?
Yeah, well, we knew that there would be adjustments. And one thing we learned early on was that everybody's pregnancy is different. Every day is different. And you never know what your body's going to say or be capable of. And so early on, I actually experienced a lot of hip pain. And due to some of that, we had already incorporated cross training. Like, I cross train even pre-pregnancy. That was a big part of my routine. So we knew that eventually, like, we would just keep adding in more cross training as I had to kind of pull back on the running. And so I used my Elliptigo and I put it on a stationary trainer. And through that, I'm able to kind of monitor like my heart rate and things like that, so I can hit different zones and get some quality sessions in on the Elliptigo. I also incorporated swimming and all of that just to supplement my running. And so from the 20 to the 24 week mark, I didn't even run a step.
Wow.
I kind of just had a muscle spasm up and it just was not releasing. And I was like, okay, you know, we got to find an alternative. And so I just spent so much time on the Elliptigo during those 4 weeks. And it was crazy because after those 4 weeks, I slowly started getting back into running. But at 27 weeks, I think it was on like Christmas Day, I went out to do a workout and we were just kind of testing the waters. And I ended up doing 3x1 mile on the track and felt great. And I was running, you know, in the kind of 5:30 range, which at the time, you know, like, I was just really shocked because, you know, I did have to take off that time, from running. So it was just a testament to how much work I think I put in during that 20 to 24 weeks and, put it in on the Elliptigo and stuff. So I was really excited because from 27 weeks on, I was able to start incorporating track workouts back into my routine.
Wow. Wow. That was a nice Christmas gift then, those 3x1 miles.
It was. Yeah. Some people might not agree with that, but
No, we feel you. We feel you.
So Ellison and I had the fun opportunity to ride Elliptigo machines, and the movement was very different than I expected. I thought it would be like an elliptical machine, so more forward and back, but it really was, surprisingly to me, more up and down. So it really does seem to simulate the running stride.
That's absolutely what I love the most about it, is the fact that I do kind of feel like I'm continuing in my stride. Mm-hmm. And it's, I've always had a really long stride, and I know that the Elliptigo, is a lot longer stride length than many of like the indoor elliptical machines. So, that definitely is really great for like a runner. And mm-hmm. especially since I don't do second runs anymore, I do all my second runs on the Elliptigo. So mm-hmm. it's really worked out as like a great supplemental tool for me. Mm-hmm. And then throughout my pregnancy, it was just even better, because then I probably definitely wore out a few tires on that thing, even just on the trainer.
So, and you were no stranger to using an Elliptigo before getting pregnant, right? You had used it in 2014 when you broke a bone in your foot. Is that right?
Right. I have, like I said, I quit doing double runs in mm-hmm. my training. I was just finding that I was getting injured too much. And I think part of the key to success in running, especially at this level and just at my age, is staying healthy. And
how old are you?
I'm 29.
Ancient. So, oh yeah.
I hear you, but I am one of the veterans of the sport, and uh-huh. again, competing at the elite level, you put a lot on your body, and I think that this will also just kind of salvage my running career and allow me to go even longer, because I am taking those precautions now. Nice. To save some of my joints and just all around the wear and tear on my body. I'm able to get the same aerobic work. I wear a heart rate monitor, so I know the effort that I'm putting in when I'm on the Elliptigo, and I'm able to get the same physiological effects without the pounding.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you no longer do a second workout, and how often then were you using the Elliptigo during that training period leading up to it? And can you describe some of the Elliptigo workouts you were doing?
Yeah, so are you talking about pre-pregnancy or during
During the pregnancy, I guess, suppose. Okay. I know you said you dropped them and picked up this as a second.
Yeah. So. I would say just in general, pre-pregnancy, when I was healthy, most of my workouts, would take place on the track and interval sessions and things like that. And then the Elliptigo was my supplemental kind of second run. And I was on it about 3 days a week during that time. During my pregnancy, I was on the Elliptigo. And even coming back, I'm still on the Elliptigo quite a bit more. I mean, it was almost pretty much every day I was on the Elliptigo. Mm-hmm. Even if I did a long run, I sometimes would come in from a long run and extend the run by jumping on the Elliptigo.
Oh.
So it was just a way to add kind of volume without the impact, especially as I was getting bigger and a little more
cumbersome.
Just weight on my body. So, Darren would always, like, when I would be supplementing an actual workout, again, I would wear the heart rate monitor, and kind of the thing was he'd give me different intervals to hit and different heart rate zones. So sometimes I found that, getting my heart rate up, I'd put it in maybe not quite the highest gear, but just like kind of that mid range where I could really spin my legs and get my legs turning over quickly. And that really elevates my heart rate. So, we would just do different interval lengths, and he'd give me the heart rate kind of thing and what he wanted out of that. I mean, I did everything from stepping stones where it was like 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes. And each 20 minutes, you try and raise your heart rate, 10 more beats. So you're kind of really grinding at the end. And mm-hmm. then I've also done short sprints, like 1 minute on, 1 minute off. So I've done a full array of workouts. Basically, if you can think of it as a running workout, you can replicate it on the Elliptigo.
And then tell us how it works with it being on a trainer. Are we talking just like a regular bike trainer?
Yeah. So I think most trainers come, it is a, you do need like a small wheel adapter, but most trainers have that adapter available. And so it's a bike trainer and it becomes an indoor elliptical for, you know, for your house. And obviously being pregnant, that was the safest, most ideal way for me to use it.
How has it been running postpartum? We did read in People magazine that you were cleared to run 1 week after delivering Abigail, but you waited until 2 weeks postpartum to start running again.
Yeah, so at about a week postpartum, I started back with on the elliptico and also doing pelvic floor exercises. And we just kind of wanted to start building that base before we hopped right back into running. But I think it was a good decision, and I've, you know, been making a lot of progress, and just my body's been responding well. And so I'm excited about that. Like I didn't know how to, you know, you don't know what to expect. You don't know how you're going to feel, but I feel very lucky and blessed in coming out on the other side and how things have been going for me.
Good.
Nice. All right. So last question. I said earlier that we love TMI. So, we got to ask, any bodily surprises, about being a new mom, like any leakage of sorts or having to double bag your boobs, anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I always joke and to my husband that I have boob envy. So if I'm feeding my daughter on one side, it's like the other side's like, wait, I want to contribute. So I don't know how many times I'm walking around the house and I have a burp cloth, yep, cloth shoved down one side of my, right, mm-hmm, bra, and I haven't even remembered to remove it. Oh, so
it's a good look, huh?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure my husband's looked over at me in bed some nights and just seen like all kinds of burp cloths sticking out in different places, and I think he's just like, okay,
this is the woman I fell in love with.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. And so you're feeling optimistic about this summer?
I am. I'm cautiously optimistic because we're in a great time in American middle distance running, and I think it's one of the hardest teams in the world to make, is making the track and field, you know, the U.S. track and field team, and especially the 1500, so competitive. So even coming off and being, you know, not even having issues of coming off a pregnancy, it would have been, you know, a really tough challenge. And so I know what I'm up against, but like I said, I would have regretted sitting out. And so I'm just excited to get back out there. I'm starting to feel like Sarah again, and that's what I told my husband one workout. So.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sarah, and we'll be cheering for you this summer and beyond.
Good luck
thank
and
you.
Enjoy. Enjoy it.
Thank awesome. You so much.
Now we'd like to welcome Diane Peterson, a mother runner in the Portland area, who is the mother of a 23-year-old daughter. Diane incorporates an elliptico into her training for half marathons to save wear and tear on her 62 years young body, as well as recover from minor knee surgery earlier this year. Welcome to Another Mother Runner, Diane.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Diane, you're 62 now and running half marathons. Can you tell us a little bit about your evolution as a runner?
Well, I grew up pre-Title IX. So when I was in high school, you didn't do anything. And then I went to college at a private college in Wisconsin. It's called Carroll University now. It was Carroll College when I was there. And they had all sorts of sports for women, which I thought was really cool. So I did everything I possibly could except gymnastics. Didn't do that. And so I did, you know, volleyball, basketball, track. And then when I was a senior, there was a freshman girl came in and she wanted to do cross country. So the track coach said, sure, you two can do cross country. So yay, we started a cross country team.
Oh. So you always came in the top three then, right? At practice.
Yeah. And then we actually, the guys had a swim team and they wanted to go to a co-ed relay meet. So they put a notice up, any girls want to swim? So I said, sure, I'll swim.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, but that was, we had a 4-1-4 semester program. So January you took one class. I think I was doing my WSI then, but I was also running usually at noon, just extra. And then I'd have basketball and I had track later and swimming came in there somewhere. And I'd usually go to dinner and just fill my tray with fluids. So I finally told the basketball coach who was helping with swimming, something's got to go here and it won't be track. So she said, okay, it'll be swimming. I did do the one meet and that was it. But now they have a women's swim team too. So that's very cool.
Oh my goodness. Cool. You had a full plate as well as a full tray at the cafeteria.
Did you
and
just...
then I did my graduate work at U of O, and that was when Tom Heinonen was a grad student and just starting coaching there. His wife was the sports information director for women's athletics. I was the assistant to the women's athletic director, Becky Sisley, and Janet, Tom's wife, she was a runner. So we'd always work out with the U of O women's team and did some stuff with Oregon Track Club. It was pretty young then. So I still running. I think I took my, I took 2 years to get my master's because I really enjoyed being in school. And I didn't run as much that winter of my second year. And that, you know, I finally really missed it and, you know, came back and was running. And then I was working after I got my master's. And but I just kept running all the time. And I just do road races whenever I could. And I had no training plan. I just run every day and then I'd go race. And I kind of kept doing that. After my daughter was born, I probably wasn't running quite as much, still trying to run. I had to walk most of that pregnancy. I wasn't really running because she was kind of, she was an IVF baby. So I was pretty worried about, you know, if I ran, would I joggle that egg loose?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And my doctor said, don't worry about it. But I still worried about it. But it wasn't till probably, I mean, I always kept running, but then I'd say probably in the last, I don't know, 6 to 8 years, I finally said, you know, I'm going to get more serious about this. And I'd been doing lots of 10Ks and 5Ks. And then I thought, I'm going to try this half marathon. I'd done one years ago, but I can't even tell you how long ago. But I thought, well, I'll try another one. And so I found a little plan on competitor.com or something and followed that. And I did really well. So I thought, wow, this is cool. I want to keep doing these. So, I kind of was doing where I was, you know, probably doing 2 or 3 a year easily, maybe more sometimes.
Nice, nice. And then when and why did you start using an elliptigo?
They came, what was it, 3 years ago when they had a special deal. If you buy one, we'll give you free training for a year.
Oh.
From, yeah, Greg McMillan, I think, was the one that was doing all the coaching then. So I thought, you know, and it's supposedly $500 worth of free training stuff. So I said, okay. And I'd seen, you know, all the ads for them online and, you know, seen the how great Meb had done using his and stuff. So I thought, you know, I could try that. That might work. So I bought into the deal and I used it that summer. I was getting ready for another half then. I think it was the Portland half. And I had a set goal there of I wanted to kind of, I hadn't, my first half marathon, which was 2011, I think I did 1:38.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I know. I told my husband I'd come in at 1:45 and I was in at 1:38. So I was ecstatic. And then I did rock
at, and age 57.
Approximately. Yeah. It was 2011.
That's fantastic. So, yeah. I'm turning green right in front of everybody.
I was really excited. So then Rock and Roll was that spring, and I think I only ran like 140. So I thought, well, bummer. But there was a few hills in that one. And then, you know, and then after that, I was stuck like 140, 142, things like that. And I was like really kind of thinking, why am I not improving in this? And so I was hoping that the elliptigo would help me improve, although there were issues with that. Sometimes I was traveling, so, you know, I didn't have it with me. But I was still trying to follow things as closely as I could. And I think I ran like a 1:42 at Portland, and I was really bummed. And I think it was 2 weeks later I was down in San Francisco doing the Nike women's half, and I ran 1:43. So I thought, well, what's with that?
On a
super hilly course. You know, I think, you know, maybe I'm better for hills. I don't know. Because Portland's got like one hill and then it's pretty flat. And then it goes uphill at the finish. So I thought, well, maybe I don't do flat courses. But I thought I'd give it one more try. and do Portland again this year, last fall. And and I think I was still doing, you know, they had another follow our plan, and, you know, I think I paid to follow the plan, and my choice was between Darren Brown or Greg McMillan, and Darren's was 16 weeks and I had like 12 weeks, so I said I better do Greg's. So I ran that, and I says, I just got to break 140. I'm going to be really happy. I broke 139.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I was maybe 40 seconds away from that 2011 one. So I thought, you know, so many years, that's pretty good. But I think a lot of it, I really have to give a lot of credit to this guy I was running with. I met him about mile six, and his Garmin didn't start right, so he wanted to know what my splits were and what I was planning to hit, and he was trying to hit the same splits, but he was running the full marathon. So we ran together from like mile six to mile 11, where the marathoner split off, and all I had to do was like hang on for 2 miles. So I think that really helped, having somebody with you to go with, because a lot of the halves I run, I don't know anybody around me, so I'm running by myself.
Or they're all listening to music. That's what I find.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah.
So where do you ride the Elliptico? Because I know in our neighborhood, we've got one guy that rides it, and he gets a ton of attention. So do you ever feel a bit self-conscious even in liberal Portland?
Well, I'm not in Portland. I'm in Corbett. I'm 20 miles out in the boonies.
Oh. So the cows shoot you funny looks?
Well, I can't really ride a lot from my house because it's all uphill. And then it's all downhill. So it's like you just work your butt off going uphill, and you're, you know, suffering. And I have an 8C, and I can only get up to, you know, might get out 2 miles from here, and I can't get any higher. Mm. And then I just turn around and I just like drift back. There's another little hill before I get to my house. There's a little up and down, but it still is like, I feel like that's not doing me any good when I'm just like working really hard and then I'm doing nothing. So I go down into Gresham, the next big town between here and Portland, and they have what's called a spring water corridor.
We run on it a lot. Yeah.
So, and what I've done is I go to the main city park in Gresham and I ride out to Boring and back.
For those who don't know it, there is truly a place called Boring, Oregon.
Yep. And it's not that boring, but it's pretty nice. So it's about, I can make that into, you know, it's kind of uphill going to Boring, but it's not terribly steep at all. And then I just, you know, and then I can still push it coming back downhill, and I might go a little bit further beyond the park just to get to me, you know, what I'm trying to get to. 12 miles usually is the furthest I think I've done on it. In the summer, when I had it 2 summers ago, I didn't have it last summer. I had a bionic runner, and I tell you, I didn't like that very much, but that's another story.
What is a bionic runner?
Yeah, what is a bionic runner?
Oh, it's an Australian version of the Elliptico.
Oh.
In a sense. It has more of a runner's gait, circular pattern that your feet follow. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, that may be kind of cool, and, you know, was reading all about it and got in on a Kickstarter plan where it was like half price, so I thought that was always a good deal, and it includes shipping from Australia. So I had it shipped to where I spend about 5 or 6 weeks every summer in northern Wisconsin. Which the first summer I had the Elliptico, I used it out there, and it's pretty flat, and it was great, and I was on the bike pass, and people go, what's that? And I just buzzed by and go, Elliptico! Because I couldn't stop.
You needed, you know, like a big banner flying behind you or something.
Yeah. You know, I didn't stop to talk to him. I just was going. And so the bionic runner I used as much as I could, but it's one that it has a derailleur so that you have to pause to shift.
Oh, huh.
And yeah, so when you're going up a hill and you try to shift, you have to pause shift.
Oh dear.
And you think,
so
I'm going to fall over.
So you lose all your momentum.
Yeah.
I know. I hated it. So I brought it back to Portland and I sold it to somebody here.
Who hopefully isn't listening to this.
Yeah. So, well, no, I told them my problems, and she said, oh, she had some bike that worked like that too. And I thought, well, that's kind of crazy, but that, I don't like it. And people on the Elliptico site one time said, oh, you have to do, or no, it was on the Bionic Runner Facebook. They said, you have to do that with an Elliptico. And I says, I've never have to pause to shift. I can shift on the fly. So the first summer, I used it there. And then when I was training for the Berlin half over the winter, or when I trained for Portland last fall and I was back in Oregon, I was down on the Springwater Corridor a lot, or I was out on the streets around Mount Hood Community College. I'd drive downhill into what used to be a berry patch and drive around that neighborhood, and people still kind of look at me. And then for this winter, when I was training for the Berlin half after coming off this, it was a minor knee surgery. I had a ganglion cyst on my fib joint. And I'd had it for many, years, but it got really big and ugly, and it was like morphing. It had babies. And so the doctor took it off and said I was going to have to 6 weeks without running, and I was like in tears, but I thought, okay, I have to do it. And it was only 4 weeks, so I was like, yippee. Nice. And so that's when I used Elliptigo. But I put it on a trainer, and I rode it in the solar room of my house.
Oh, that sounds pleasant.
So, yeah. So what type of workouts do you do on it? Like, what do you have certain workouts, or is it mainly that you just focus on time and distance?
Well, time and mostly time, but it was following Darren's plan, which he might say do 40 minutes on it. So I do 40 minutes. I would shift the gears around. I found out that to get the most resistance, I had to have it in like 8. And I just couldn't get the knob tight enough on the wheel. I was really worried about screwing things up that way. So 8 was probably the toughest for me. And I would never go lower than about 6 or 5 because that was like too easy. And then if he said, oh, do, you know, hill repeats, I'd just go up and do the, I'd say, okay, a hill, moderate hill would be 3 minutes, and I'd put it in 8 and go pretty hard. I mean, I was sweating buckets usually when I was off of it.
Wow. Wow. So then, so you got these.
I kind of made it up.
Yeah. So you got these really impressive results training on the Elliptigo. And so, I mean, what do you attribute it to? I mean, is it the that you felt fresher than when you would run on the road, or what was it?
Hard to say, because I really missed running on the road. There's sometimes where it'd be like a really nice day and I was on the Elliptigo and I was thinking, I really want to be outside running on the road. Mm-hmm. I kind of miss it if I'm not pounding the pavement, but I was talking to myself saying, it's better that you're not. Your knees are going to last longer, your feet are going to last longer, your hips are going to last longer. And so I think it was just the fact that I was trying to follow this plan and resting by using the Elliptigo versus not on the pavement, because there's not really a trail here to run. It's out in the I'm out in the country, but it's all blacktop.
All right. So my best friend from high school, who's an avid triathlete and she lives in suburban Maryland, she got an Elliptigo after shattering her ankle in a rock climbing accident. Yeah. And then she had to have her ankle fused.
My husband's had his fused, but he doesn't run and he doesn't Elliptigo either.
Yeah. So she was just really, really missing running. So she got an Elliptigo. And so, I mean, what advice do you give women thinking about getting one?
I usually tell them that, think pretty much about it. I mean, I have a really good friend who had a hip replacement, and I was trying to talk him into getting one. He ended up getting a bionic runner through the Kickstarter thing, too. It's still in the box. it's still in the box. But he wants to get like a kinetic roller or something for it so he can do it indoors and his wife can do it indoors and stuff. So, but when I first got it and I took it to Mount Hood Community College where I was working, I took it down on the tracks, says, here, everybody go play with it. Or I'd have it out in the parking lot, go up and ride down around the parking lot. And so they would all try it. But sometimes cost is the biggest, non-factor for getting it. It's people just look at it and say, oh, that's a lot of money to spend. Like, yeah, but if you're serious about stuff, then it's not that bad. How much do they spend on a bike for a triathlon?
That's true. And do you find when you let people use it, I mean, are there tips you give them for that first time on it? Because I know that Ellison and I were both kind of nervous,
especially Ellison, let's be honest.
Most of my friends are pretty coordinated. I had one friend, she obviously isn't terribly coordinated, but she got on it and went about 3 steps and started to crash, and we were trying to catch her and stuff like that. But, so she's just like, oh, I'll never use that. And I'm thinking, okay. I'm just thinking,
way to
not
give it a try.
I think she needs to have training wheels.
Right, there you go. There you go. Forget the trainer, put on training wheels.
Yeah. I have an 8C and I just bought an 11R. It's in Boulder, Colorado, though.
Oh, and you're getting it shipped or you're going to it?
No, I'm going to pick it up on my way back from Wisconsin this summer. I'll take my 8C to Wisconsin and leave it there because it's fine for the hills there. And then I'll stop in Boulder. My niece is supposed to pick it up this weekend. And I told her she's a former, you know, top-notch world, you know, ranked triathlete many years ago. And I said, you're going to love this. So hopefully she doesn't steal it from me. But I said, I'll stop by and pick it up on the, in August and see you then. So she's got a couple months to play with it now.
Nice.
Three or four months.
You are spreading the Elliptigo word. Good for you.
She hadn't heard of it. I thought, when Boulder, aren't there a lot in Boulder?
Right. Don't they know everything in Boulder? Aren't they up on all the latest trends, all the latest fitness things?
I would think so.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, good luck with all your Elliptigos, Diane, and thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Nice to chat with you.
So, E, I had fun when we went on that Elliptigo.
Yeah, you had fun. You were much, much braver than I was. I believe I went, you know, I did two little loops with the guy chasing me most of the time. You were phenomenal.
Oh, well, I even on a bike, I don't like doing turns all that much, you know, like a tight turn, you know, like if you get somewhere and you want to turn around and go back or whatever. So that was my thing. I was like, oh, I'm just going to keep riding. And we were, you know, it's a huge parking lot. I was, you know, like at a mall or whatever. And yeah, so, but now after talking to them, I'm ready to get back on one.
Well, especially with some of the times that Diane. Oh, yeah.
Will
did.
I be able to?
Wow.
Then suddenly run as fast as Diane.
Right. We're going to hold you to that, Diane.
Right. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, here's Dimity with a slice of the Train Like a Mother Club.
Salutations. This is Dimity in Denver with your Train Like a Mother Club corner. Thank you for all your enthusiasm and questions and. I don't know, kudos and hurrahs for the heart rate challenge. It seems like a lot of you are really fired up about it, which is very cool. So happy to keep answering questions about that. You can email us at TLAMclub@gmail.com or put them up on the Facebook page or whatever works. But in the meantime, we have some races still going off. Wave one of the 10K and 13.1 challenge. Race this weekend. So good luck to everybody doing that. And then we've still got plenty of mother runners getting their training done. And that's where our comment comes from today. This is Melissa, who's in the marathon challenge. She says, I'm in week 10 of training and trying to get motivated to run my 20 miler today. The weather is looking better today and I can get it done during preschool time, just barely. I shouldn't be feeling so blah this week, especially after hearing inspiring stories from the first wave of marathoners. But I'm guessing this is when everyone starts feeling blah, getting into the thick of longer runs, start testing race day strategies, etc. Sure hope this run is a confidence booster and a mood changer. And I just want to absolutely validate everything you're feeling, Melissa. And if you're in the middle of your training, whether you're in a challenge or not, there are two times where I typically get the blahs. It's in the middle of the training and at the very after the race, right after the race, the post-race blues. But that middle of the training, it's not necessarily blah, but it's just, it's like you're not close enough to the start to still feel that enthusiasm, and you're not close enough to the finish to be all fired up and just be like, okay, I only have X amount more of these runs or X amount of days to go. You're like, oh, I only have 56 more days to go. Not quite the countdown you want. So anyway, hang in there. The good news is that Melissa weighed in afterwards and she got it done. She said it wasn't necessarily fun and miles 10 to 13 were tough because of the hills. But at the end of the day, it's another long run in the books. Thanks for hearing me out and cheering me on. So good luck to everybody racing this weekend. Anyone else who's not, keep it going. And we will see you next week in the Train Like a Mother Club corner.
Speaking of the Train Like a Mother Club, earlier this week, we launched four training programs based on heart rate training. You might have listened to our interview with the coach, Mary Catherine Fleming, on our last podcast. There are two half marathon plans and two marathon ones aimed at prepping you for a strong fall race anytime from late September to late November. There are 9 waves of training groups, with the first ones kicking off the day after Mother's Day. So head on over to trainlikeamother.club for all the details. Again, that's trainlikeamother.club. And many happy miles to you.